Hi, I'm Jennifer Vine, President and CEO of the Education Foundation of Sarasota County, and your host for Education Conversations, a discussion forum to share innovative and relevant thoughts, research, and ideas on education today, and to help prepare students to thrive. Welcome to this episode of Education Conversations, Engines of Innovation. Our story begins 35 years ago when citizen advocates formed a not-for-profit organization dedicated to supporting and enhancing Sarasota County's public education. What started as an organization providing teacher grants has evolved into an innovative, agile team committed to supporting students, families, and teachers so that they can thrive and reach their full potential. We believe education transforms lives, and our mission is to enhance the potential of students, promote excellence in teaching, and inspire innovation in education. Today, our vision is to unite the community to prepare each and every student for life. Each year, thanks to the many, many generous and engaged donors and individuals who believe in and support our work, the Education Foundation can move quickly and thoughtfully to serve over 44,000 students and 2,600 instructional and support staff at 59 schools in Sarasota County. We can develop new approaches to address challenges facing students and teachers today, and we help more students find their purpose and plan and prepare for life so they can graduate better equipped to succeed in a fast-changing world. One such engaged donor and individual, Brock Leach, joins me today. Brock is a current board member of the Education Foundation, and he also is our immediate past chair, and he has quite an illustrious career history, and we're so honored to have him on our board. He is the former Chief Innovation Officer for PepsiCo and the current Unitarian Universalist Minister right here in Sarasota. He brings incredible experience and compassionate, innovative thinking to the work that we do, and we're so fortunate to have him. Brock has been instrumental in guiding the Education Foundation's Life Readiness work, which aims to ensure each and every student can have access to the relationships and resources they need to plan and prepare for life after high school. He has been essential in developing our strategic plan and defining our work. Brock, welcome to Education Conversations.
Jennifer, thank you so much. That is overly generous, but I'll take it.
You're good. Listeners, you're going to enjoy listening to Brock and learning from him. He is one of the most creative, innovative thinkers, and like I said, compassionate, but he also just always operates from such a strong vein of authenticity. I always learn so much from you, Brock, as well. I want to talk to you first, as you've been involved in helping us define who we are. How would you say the Education Foundation, in your words, has evolved over the past 35 years? And what inspires you most about our work today?
Well, I think it's evolved from a good place, from, as you said at the beginning, community volunteers who really cared about the future of kids and were willing to put their time, treasure, and talent into supporting that. But under your leadership, frankly, over the last 8 years, we've become more focused on our value proposition, what it is we do that no one else in this county is able to do, and that is to partner with the school district to help kids be fully prepared for life after high school. The district is understandably very focused on academic achievement, everything, you know, all of the incentives, everything aligned to support that. But there's so much more than academic achievement that kids need to really be successful in life. And brick by brick, you have led an organization that is building a community-wide support network for that work. And to me, that is, I can't think of anything more important to be part of.
You know, we talk often about building that educational ecosystem and creating that network. And sometimes in our conversations, as you and I have had with many people throughout our community, sometimes people get it. And they get excited at the concept and the prospect of us kind of delving into that work. And then sometimes other people look at us kind of like with this fuzzy, quizzical look. And so can you maybe further elaborate on why we are actually pursuing that endeavor and why it's so important?
Well, I think one of the things you and I both learned from talking to folks in the community is that people make assumptions that what they grew up with in terms of support is happening for kids today, mm-hmm. and it's happening in the schools. Mm-hmm. And that's just not the reality that we live into right now. The reality is that you know, half of the kids in our county are kids that are low income. Mm-hmm. The reality is that their parents are quite often very busy working. Many of them have single parents. The reality is that they're disconnected from a lot of other networks that might support kids in figuring out who they are and who they're meant to be in the world. And so the school district can't do all of that by itself. Mm-hmm. And so what we need to do is create that community support system mm-hmm. That many of us benefited from naturally when we grew up. But it, you know, you have to realize it doesn't really exist for kids right now. Not only that, but they're confronted with all kinds of conflicting messaging and expectations through social media. You know, they're exposed to things that I was never exposed to mm-hmm. As an adolescent. So I think for most people, it's realizing that what we're doing today really isn't enough. What we have to do is knit together a network of supports for kids to really understand who they are and what they're meant to be and achieve their full potential. And none of us can do that by ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know, we need a network of people around mm-hmm. us to do that.
You know, it's so interesting. One school of thought that I've often been referencing as we've been talking about that network solution is I have found the comparison to concierge physicians to be a similar comparison, because a lot of times people understand United States healthcare, while we have an abundance of wonderful, very specialized care and medicine available and physicians who can do such great work, oftentimes, particularly those who may be low income or marginalized, underserved people, may be going to, at best, let's just, and again, I'm just giving a very general response by knowing, you know, I'm not trying to give too much indictment on this, but they may walk into an urgent care center as their best, highest level of care that they can receive. And yet what the concierge physician provides for those who can afford those services is that person is the driver of creating the connective tissue to all of the different symptoms that a patient may be having, and then finding them and pointing them in the direction of the best resource to take care of that. And so you get this level of care that is more individualized and personalized to your needs than what the mass level of care might be able to offer. And so I think that has been a place that I've been trying to kind of move in terms of sharing the imagination of, if we had a network solution in our community that can help support students, this is something that it could look like. So I don't know if that resonates with you at all.
I think that's actually a terrific analogy. I spent some time working as a chaplain at Tampa General Hospital for a couple of years, and I saw exactly what you're talking about. A whole bunch of specialists who really know what they're doing, but they're not, no one has the time to step back and look at the whole picture.
Right.
And help guide patients and families. So I think that that's really apt. I think the part of that analogy that is most compelling to me is the idea of a trusted person who's yes. looking at who, with whom you have a relationship, who is really seeing the larger picture of where you are and where you could go.
Yeah.
And it, to me, that's the key missing ingredient. You know, in smaller, particularly private schools, mm-hmm. that's what parents pay for. They pay for the ability to have teachers know who the students are and know that they're valued and spend the time with
right,
that.
Right.
And that to me is, we need to figure out a way to instill that for all of our students. You know, they so can't right. just be the folks that can afford private schools.
Yep, I would agree with you on that. It leads me to this next question, and that's where, you know, across our state and the country, education foundations play many roles and support districts, school districts, you know, in different ways. One way, which may be perhaps less common, but something that we have certainly delved into, and that is serving as an innovator, as a hub for research and development. Why is it important for education foundations to consider serving as an innovator for school districts?
Well, the schools are bound to a lot of obligations. You know, it's a fairly structured regulatory environment to start with. Mm-hmm. And it's a huge operation, particularly, you know, our district is 45,000 kids and trying to serve everybody with widely varying needs. It's a real challenge. So in any kind of organization of that size and complexity, you need to have a group who's thinking ahead, a group who seeing needs that aren't being met, and importantly, is willing to try things and experiment and learn from those things and do them over. Mm-hmm. Because the reality is, if you're trying to do something that's never been done before, you don't know what it looks like ahead of time.
Right.
You know, you have to say, I know that these are the key elements of the solution. I'm going to try one approach to that, see how it works. Mm-hmm. I'm going to learn from that, and I'm going to do it again. And I'm probably going to do it another time.
How did you do that at, like, PepsiCo, for example, serving as the chief innovation officer? Can you give us an example?
Yeah, there are many. Actually, the chief role I had as chief innovation officer was improving the healthfulness of our products. Mm-hmm. You know, PepsiCo, well known for soft drinks, mm-hmm. but also snack food. Mm-hmm. And had a lot of other healthier products. But the challenge there was we knew how to do one thing really well. And we could, on the other hand, we could produce healthier foods that were every bit as fun and convenient as our other foods. But it took some different technologies. It took figuring out what assets we could bring to it. And my axiom was it always took 3 tries.
Yeah.
You know, we never got it right the first time out of the blocks. We had to do it multiple times to learn how to make it work so that you could bring the best of your capabilities to do it and also intersect that with what needed to change.
Right.
And the nature of the work is you have to have the patience and the courage mm-hmm. to try things and to do them over again. And you don't want to like bet the farm on the first idea because right. chances are it's not completely right.
Well, it's so wonderful how in the corporate world, you see more of that investment in the R&D. Right. I mean, that's a very significant investment. We don't see that as much, particularly, certainly with taxpayer dollars, so which adds another element of why education foundations can really serve as that R&D. And knowing that companies need to always be looking forward in an increasingly complex world, that we're adapting faster than we have ever done so before, which then leads me into looking at it from a student perspective, because, you know, the educational landscape is clearly changing fast, and students are very different in ways that we've never seen in any other point in history. And so thinking about what students need today or they might need tomorrow, kind of, you know, forward thinking, what do you think we can do to best serve them?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that we have to realistically say that teaching kids knowledge and current knowledge in a variety of areas is important, but it's not enough. Because the nature of life and work in the 21st century demands flexibility. Mm-hmm. It demands the ability to know what gifts you have. You obviously have to know the basics. Mm-hmm. You have to have mm-hmm. a wide view of knowledge bases. But what you really need to know is who you are and how to plug yourself into a rapidly changing world and workforce. Mm-hmm. And that is not something, and by the way, adolescence is the critical window for that.
Right.
That's when most of us begin to figure it out because we get experiences of ourselves in the world. Mm-hmm. So I think that's one of the key things that's missing in the current environment. You know, the notion that, yes, but kids really need to have the skills in addition to the knowledge. So saying we want to achieve academic excellence is important. I'm not trying to dismiss mm-hmm. that in any way. Mm-hmm. But it's insufficient. A lot of what people take away that's most valuable from their adolescence is that self-knowledge. That self-knowledge that allows them to say, I know that this is where I can play myself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's really helpful. We're actually going to be talking about students' perspectives and the challenges that they are facing and how we've seen really a lot of the adaptations or lack thereof that students have been experiencing in life over generations in some future episodes. So for those listeners who are, you know, listening in today, I certainly encourage you all to listen to some additional episodes, and I think we'll tie into some of that work. Brock, you really are such an inspiration. And in 2006, you actually left the corporate world. You charted your own new path. You found your purpose and higher calling. You've gone to seminary training and you became a minister, as you know, just referenced. And you also support, even today, religious innovators. You're part of the Human Rights Division for the Unitarian Universalist Church. And you have said repeatedly, and something that I think is in your DNA, is that the greatest natural resource is human potential. How does your philosophy translate to your work with students and ultimately your work here at the Education Foundation? What's your purpose for being here today?
Well, I think ministry for me is about helping people find their resources to deal with the challenges and opportunities in their lives. As we talked earlier, you know, you can't do that by yourself. Mm-hmm. You really need to be part of a community. You need to be part of a group of people who help you figure out what matters to you. So this work is a ministry to me. I know that word means different things to different people, but to me, it's a ministry. And I can't think of a more important one. So that's why I'm here. That's why it's really important to me. As an anecdote, when I was a teenager, my parents retired early. I was a very late child. My parents retired early and moved to a rural Colorado town from the Detroit area. Mm-hmm. And so I went from being in very big, impersonal, tough schools mm-hmm. to being in a small rural high school. And for me, it was liberating because everybody in the school did the same things because there were no other options. Mm-hmm. And so I knew everybody and I felt belonging. But also there was a guy there who was a United Church of Christ congregational minister who believed the work of the church didn't happen, you know, in the church. It happened in the world. And so he made it his business to take a bunch of us teenagers into experiences that we probably wouldn't do today. Wow. You know, so we built a Head Start Center in the middle of the winter when it was minus 27 degrees in Conejos County, Colorado. And we worked with Alcoholic Rehabilitation Center downtown Denver with people who were having DTs, which you wouldn't do with kids today.
Yeah.
But we did all these experiences where I felt like, well, I might make a small difference, but I could make a difference mm-hmm. in how rewarding that was and what I could bring to it. I learned that. That was his ministry, and that inspired my trajectory.
Wow.
But I think that's how it relates to what we're trying to do at the Education Foundation.
That's true. When you think about key adjectives that would describe an innovator, because I think sometimes the word innovation could be overused, and certainly as the Education Foundation has been really embracing, it's part of our mission. What adjectives, like what characteristics maybe define an innovator?
Somebody who's an effective listener and collaborator.
Mm.
So we have this image of innovators as being geniuses, standalone geniuses, you know, that have ideas that nobody else has. And some of them do.
Mm-hmm.
But the real work of innovation is listening carefully to what's missing. Listening to who you're trying to serve and what they can identify as needs. And oftentimes, they can't imagine what the solution is because they're living in the middle of the need. So you need to help them unpack that. You need to understand what's really going on here. It's a question of continuing to drive deeper into, tell me more about that. Why
mm-hmm.
is it?
Mm-hmm.
And then it's about bringing a set of people together who bring different perspectives, skills, talents to it, and brainstorming how we might meet those needs. You know, it's and that's a lot of what we've been doing with the creative mm-hmm. problem solving work. But so that exercise is having enough humility to say, we're going to listen to the people who are in this situation, understand their needs, and then we're going to bring in a very diverse set of people
mm-hmm.
to think about the solutions. And usually what happens is ideas emerge in those conversations that are bigger than any one person could have conceived of.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, that is a discipline. Mm-hmm. It's actually a discipline called design thinking
mm-hmm.
that works. And so we want creative thinkers. We want people who think outside of the box to be part of that. But that alone isn't sufficient. It needs to be a team exercise.
Yeah, I would agree with you that innovation is definitely a team sport.
Yeah.
And it certainly requires an element of high trust as well. Yes. And I, again, if you're an educator and you're listening to any of this work, the Education Foundation is a safe space. We know you're on the front lines. We know the challenges, and to the students as well, what you're facing and what you're going through. And we always avail our ears to trying to listen and learn more and then apply some solutions collectively and together. But we can only do that when there's a culture of trust as well. So yes. I would add that extra element, but that's really, very insightful. Brock, thank you so much for joining me today to discuss the Education Foundation and its role as an engine of innovation. Listeners, I hope you learned something new about us, and I certainly invite you to get involved with our work to support students, families, and teachers. We care about our community. We certainly care about the next generation of leaders, and there's many ways that you can get involved in shaping their future, and we want you to learn more about us, our resources and programs, and ways that you can get involved, because again, we can only do this better together. So please visit our website at www.edfoundationsrq.org. And again, we just thank you so much for listening to today's podcast, and be sure to tune in to our other episodes of Education Conversations. For now, this is Jennifer Vine signing off for the Education Foundation of Sarasota County.